This is Mae Brussel, and I'm doing the second half hour of World Watchers, program number 806. I mentioned that Robert Owen was the liaison from Adolfo Calero and Mr. John Hall down in Costa Rica to the National Security Council of Oliver North, the president's highest officials out of the NSC, where he'd pick up money for the operations that were illegal. Congress had said no military aid. So this was done by private individuals. And Robert Owen worked for Robert Gray and his public relations firm before he took off that cloak and switched down to Central America, just as Robert McFarlane worked for the National Security Council, took off that cloak and became a private individual with no apparent salary except his service pay. And Richard Secord, General Secord, retired from the Air Force and took on a private cloak and went to Stanford Technology Training Group, all of them working continuously with the Defense Department and this very special secret pocket inside the government, while all allegedly not getting any salary or assistance from the government, but working with the very highest echelon. Now, Robert Gray's office was a takeover. It was formed after the Watergate disaster. That was the office where G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt and James McCord and the various Watergate teams used that as a cover of a private relations firm while they were in fact paid by the CIA and the White House. And when that office was exposed, Mullen Associates, which was a cover for the entire Hughes organization, although Howard Hughes hadn't been seen physically since 1966, after that was exposed, then Robert Gray's office opened and would be a continuation of the Mullen Associates, only this time Gray and company. Robert Gray is escorting Rosemary Woods during the Watergate era. She was the secretary of Richard Nixon when the 18-minute gap occurred in the tapes. And also there were entirely two tapes were missing totally. And at that time, they wanted to bring in Gordon Novell to erase what was on those tapes, but he said they didn't give enough money for it. So the shredding documents, the shredding parties go back to these early periods when a lot of information was destroyed in the committee to reelect the president. They had their shredding parties, and then in the White House itself to cover up what was going on. Now, part of Mullen Associates that becomes Gray and Company, because Paul Laxalt, the heir apparent to the Hughes Empire, and William Casey, and those persons become very, very close to Gray. And Tom Braden on CNN, you see the gentleman Tom Braden from the left. His wife is an employee of Gray and Company. These offices were the cover for activities of G. Gordon Liddy. And I mentioned, just started to mention at the end of the first half hour that G. Gordon Liddy was closely associated with Robert Mardian, a defendant in the Watergate story, a deputy director of the Justice Department, head of the LEAA, and the terrible grand jury investigations that took place during those times. Mardian and Liddy used to go down the basement and watch Nazi documents and archives of the Gestapo or the activities of Nazi Germany. And when Mardian needed an attorney at the time of Watergate, and there was an attorney to represent the president and the White House at that time, Leonard Garment became the attorney for these Watergate persons in the White House, and he also was the attorney for Alexander Haig. And Leonard Garment was on the stand this past week, for the past 3 days of last week, as the attorney now for Robert McFarlane, the national security advisor who formerly worked in the NSC with Henry Kissinger and in the State Department during Alexander Haig. He appeared. And then the attorney, Mr. Green, appeared in the hearings too, and Green was the attorney for General Richard Secord. If Secord comes on again, you'll see Mr. Green. And Green was the attorney for Robert Mardian during these days when Mardian and G. Gordon Liddy were living the Odessa, the Nazi Odessa Gestapo activities in mind and in reality. So it's naturally and fitting that Secord's attorney, Secord coming out of an organization originally created by and for Otto von Bolschring, should have the same attorney that Robert Mardian has, and this is 1987. So, and as I say, Paul Laxalt and William Casey are close to this firm. So the shredding parties are familiar to these people, and the attorneys are familiar to the activities of Watergate that were so carefully concealed by most people describing the real purposes of Watergate. In 1986, Neil Livingston supervised the Grays' foreign operations, and he was severed for, he was never charged for a crime, but he was severed because of a scandal with Alejandra Orfea. Many of you remember that, or maybe you don't remember it at all. I'll do some on it later. He was head of the Organization of American States, getting a big salary from them prior to his retirement for several months while he was on the salary of Robert Gray. And then there was a scandal in Madrid where they found that Orfeo was involved in paying a legislature to control the elections in Spain. And so the international division had some problems there, and Livingston severed from these activities. But the time when he was working at Robert Gray, he was working with Mr. Owen, who mentioned him, and he now is active with the Institute for Foreign Policy, and he writes for their newspaper their analysis of terrorism, and he is active as an expert on terrorism and lectures all over the country on how to defend yourself and how to kill. So last week I mentioned the plot to kill Daniel Ortega and the relationship of two men arrested to the office of Representative Philip Crane of Illinois, and Crane is on the board of Western Goals, and John Singlaub on the board of Western Goals escorts Robert Owen to Robert K. Brown, and Singlaub has come right out of the Peregrine Corporation in Peregrine in Dallas, Texas, with the links of persons right up to Casper Weinberger, and then they in turn go Owen and Singlaub up to Robert Brown, who hires mercenaries who can do killing and assassinations and send death squads to South America. And the tentacles through companies like Peregrine illustrate exactly their links to the Defense Department and how the so-called formers are presently doing the policies of the president, and that is the important thing. I've quoted many times the book Spooks by Jim Hogan, how Robert Brown was conceiving with other persons for a group that would be called the American Volunteer Group on assassination techniques, how Robert Brown was linked with H.L. Hunt, and Lamar Hunt is one of the big funders of the Contra Operations, the so-called charity group, and how the AVG could simulate a heart attack that would not be noticeable. A person could die of a heart attack, and actually it was a gas gun that would cause them to die. And Robert Brown's name has been alongside of his Soldier of Fortune with all the various knives, books, and information on how to kill and assassinate. So while some people are exposing the plots to kill Daniel Ortega, and some were revealed several years ago, or the plans to kill Khomeini, these are the teams, and this is how they sever themselves from different organizations as they move to the next position. And the value of these hearings is that every time a witness gets on the stand, he mentions something that rings a lot of other bells. Now, speaking of bells, a very important person died this past week, just last Monday, James Jesus Angleton, a counter-spy for the intelligence community. For one time in this country, he was targeting the lives of Senator Edward Kennedy, a Democratic candidate, Hubert Humphrey, a Democratic candidate, Dr. Martin Luther King, who was murdered, Mary Jo Kopechne, a lady at a party with Ted Kennedy, was murdered, and Angleton was very heavily involved with the John Kennedy assassination in Division 5 of the intelligence community with J. Edgar Hoover. Now, it's an amazing thing that has happened since these hearings have taken place, and granted, these men are old, but there are important people that have died just since February whose names run through all of the stories that I'm telling you and connect with each other, and these heavies have died at this time. I mentioned Mike Burke of the Central Intelligence Agency, who died February the 16th, who was in Hollywood for a while, went to Europe, ran spies for the CIA, managed Ringling Brothers, Barnum & Bailey at Madison Square Garden, worked for Gulf and Western, and I did a broadcast on Mike Burke, several of them, regarding Gulf and Western, going back to 1983, this is 4 years ago, and I described Gulf and Western and Charles Blue Dorn in their multinational spy network. In the same broadcast, I talked about Edward Lansdale, who died just 1 week after Mike Burke died. And I referred to, on broadcast number, it's 589, if you haven't want to look it up, Gulf and Western moves quickly to cast a company in his image. This is a article from the Wall Street Journal by Martin S. Davis on Mr. Blue Dorn and Gulf and Western, and on the printed sheet that I have with the broadcast, it says Arthur Lyman, longtime associate partner in the firm of Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton, and Garrison. Paul Weiss, Rifkin, and so forth set up TCI, Audubon Bolshevik Network, the attorneys for 20th Century Fox, for Marvin Davis, the attorneys for Chris Kraft, for John DeLorean, for the Sterling National Bank, that's the Credit Suisse in Switzerland, with the notorious money for Brunei is missing, and they've been doing the other banking through Credit Suisse, a lot of it, along with that CFR account in Switzerland. And I illustrated in this one article, you might want to look it up, the Wall Street Journal, March 16, 1983, the links of Gulf and Western to Michele Sindona of the Vatican and to the connections of what I'd refer to as the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi group. In a conjunction with that broadcast, I talked about Mike Burke, this gentleman who just died, and I mentioned him because Burke died February the 16th, Edward Lansdale February the 25th, Santos Trafficano March the 19th, William Casey May the 7th, and James Jesus Angleton May the 13th. These are some very important persons, five very important persons who worked with each other. Casey and Angleton were both Knights of Malta from the Vatican, and they worked in operations with the Bay of Pigs and with Southeast Asian drug traffic, with the covert actions of the intelligence community, that the very persons involved in the Iran-Contra affair linked directly to these particular people. And many of the defendants in the Christic Institute lawsuit tie into these operations concerning Mike Burke, Lansdale, Trafficante, Casey, and Angleton. So there was a month off in April, but two died in February, one in March, and two in May. And Burke was in the OSS with William Casey. He worked at Warner Brothers for 18 months. He was there in 1945 while Errol Flynn and Ronald Reagan were working there together. In 1949, he went on to Albania. He worked inside with the CIA, inside Poland, Czechoslovakia, and with the Madison Square Garden and with Sonny Werblin. This was Reagan's early agent in Hollywood. He worked closely with him, and Werblin was part of Gulf and Western. And the broadcast I did four years ago, is about the connections of Simon, the law office of Simon Rifkin, and Mr. Arthur Lyman. And it's interesting, Lyman, of course, is one of the chief counsels of the House Intelligence Group, who has been questioning just one day so far. He'll be back. And I listed those connections. Now, Angleton is a person I could do 20 consecutive broadcasts about. I won't do that much, but I have to do a little bit because he set the ground rules. He, with Alan Dulles and William Donovan, Wild Bill Donovan, set the ground rules with the fascism from the OSS to the very case of Klaus Barbie that's on trial today. And a chronology of Angleton's role, just briefly, is in that book on Stefano Dalla Calle that I referred to many times. It's by Stuart Christie. It's a very good book, and it's worth owning. It's published by the South End. No, it's from England. I'm sorry. It's published in England. The Anarchy magazine, Refract Publications. And in this chronology, they describe the role where Angleton fits in to the fascism that became American fascism, that is the team behind the Reagan administration. There's an article in the magazine section of the New York Times just this past week called Reagan's Band of True Believers, and it's by Frances Fitzgerald, the woman who wrote Fire in the Lake, American Revisited. She wrote about Southeast Asia. And she goes into the fact that these people have no limits in the White House, that the Reagan people knew that their actions were illegal, but Reagan's people never think that they are, that there's no limits, and she compares them to a cult mentality. Now, Ms. Fitzgerald is almost on the tip of what the cult mentality went into, but it's really that sort of destiny and that Hitlerian gospel and idealism of the pure third, the Aryan nation in the Third Reich that would live 1,000 years. And a lot of that groundwork was set in specific cities and places that can be detailed, and one of them had to do with James Angleton. And the chronology of this book, it begins with this chronology, and it goes then into Mr. Borghese, Count Borghese, who, of course, was a friend of Clay Shaw's and connects to the Kennedy assassination, as does James Angleton. In 1933, in July, the Allies landed in Sicily, And according to this chronology, they were flying Mafia colors. The Mafia wasn't allowed in Italy while Mussolini was in power, and they were anxious to get rid of him in order to get the Mafia going again. In July of 1943, July 25th, 2 weeks later, there were talks between Hitler and Mussolini and King Victor Emmanuel to assume supreme command, and Mussolini was arrested at the time, and they were making arrangements who would run Italy. The Fascist Party was dissolved 3 days later in Italy, and then Otto Skorzeny, working for Adolf Hitler, this was before the Battle of the Bulge, and he was Hitler's most favorite person. He went on to work for our Central Intelligence Agency and released the Nazi money out of the Swiss bank accounts later, kept his offices in Madrid. Otto Skorzeny rescued Mussolini, which pleased Adolf Hitler, and they set up a small republic, a little piece of ground called the Salo Republic, from which Mussolini would work until he was captured and killed. But this is the kind of stronghold we're encouraging the Contras to get in Nicaragua, get a piece of land, hang a flag there, and we'll recognize you, and you'll be the official country. In June 44, and the Battle of the Bulge was in December. This is prior. This is the summer, just beginning the summer, prior to the Battle of the Bulge, which is going to be a complete sellout, where the Americans are to meet with the top Germans at the Rhine. In Italy, the Allies occupied Rome. The command of the OSS, the forerunner of the CIA, went to Colonel Clifton T. Carter, an admirer of Marshal Pietro Badoglio, former Italian Army Chief of Staff who led the assault on Ethiopia. Carter's executive officer of the OSS was Major James H. Angleton. He was an expatriate. He lived in Milan, and he sent his son, James Jesus Angleton, who had studied in Italy prior to the war, who had close right-wing fascist connections, he sent his son to Rome to be in charge of the special operations. Now, it's out of Milan that Paul Montini came, described as the Milan Mafia, and it is in Milan, the headquarters of the Banco Ambrosiano that tapped all over the world and has this great amount of missing $1.2 billion in Panama banks at the present time. And Roberta Calvi was in the building of the Banco Ambrosiano in Milan. The headquarters there were run by Major James H. Angleton under the orders of OSS Colonel Clifton Carter. And Angleton had lived in Milan for a long time, and they sent his son, James Jesus, who had studied in Italy, to Rome to be head of the special operations of the OSS. And this book says, from the moment he arrived in Rome, Angleton established a close contact with fascist and right-wing organizations and the clandestine anti-communist movement, where he recruited his special operations personnel. And this is identical to what happened in Europe with Klaus Barbie, where Americans were using Barbie. The OSS and the CIC would employ Klaus Barbie, and Angleton began to hire the fascists into power in Italy. In the New York Times, along with that other article on the secret, the team around Reagan as being a cult, there's also a very good article on Klaus Barbie and how America recruited him and the way that America used Klaus Barbie. That's the Sunday Magazine section, May 10th, 1987. I'll do more on that later, but this is the parallel. The Barbie would work with the Nazis and Americans in Germany and in France, breaking those people who had been in the resistance. And James Jesus Angleton was working with people in Italy who were recruiting agents from already the Italian government, persons responsible for invasions and massacres and so forth, to work for the OSS. This book says Angleton became the key American figure controlling all right-wing and neo-fascist political and paramilitary groups in Italy in the post-war period. As in Germany, the U.S. Secret Service involvement with and commitment to the far right during this period facilitated the rebirth of fascism, of the extreme right as a dominant force within Italian politics. One of the numerous terrorist and fascist networks controlled by Angleton had the initials FAR, Fasci d'Azione Rivoluzionaria, whose activities included attacks on liberated radio stations and pirate broadcasts then of fascist anthems and pro-Mussolini speeches. An important figure in FAR was Pino Romualdo, an ex-vice secretary of the Salo Republic, where Mussolini was, who said he was the illegitimate son and heir of Mussolini, who became one of the main organizers of the MSI, which included Licio Gelli, who was at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, and people close to George Bush and Ronald Reagan. In report number 86500-3 to the National Security Council, and the NSC was formed by 1947, this was prepared by James Angleton himself, all the clandestine anti-communist organizations are listed, and the author confirms that these are financed by the United States Secret Services into the hands of James Angleton. Angleton had great stress on the importance of the Armata Italiana di Liberazione, AIL, that was led by Colonel Musso and General Sorese, the former Minister of War in the government of Marshal Badoglio. In report 86500-7747, they report that they have 50 generals in the process of organizing any coup d'etat, and they will fight the anti-communists. And by December 1944, December the 8th, and this is when the Battle of Bulge was taking place in Germany, the Malmondy confrontation of American troops with the Germans, when Fritz Kramer, Hitler's general Fritz Kramer, was later put as a prisoner for ordering the massacre of Americans, and a General Fritz Kramer was there with Henry Kissinger. At that time, simultaneously with that, James Angleton was working in December 44 with British and American military. They were signing a secret accord in Rome that proposed that Allied financial aid and arms shipments would go to the Committee for National Liberation of Upper Italy, and in return for the agreement that they would guard northern industrial plants from the Germans and stage a rapid disarmament and liberation, that they would take over the government of Italy quickly. And the main British figure in negotiations with the anti-communist partisans during this period was a mysterious man named John McCaffrey of the Special Intelligence Service, M16, who operated under the cover of being a press attaché to the British legation in Bern, Switzerland, where Alan Dulles was located. And McCaffrey and Edgar Leslie of M16, also placed in Bern, were closely with Alan Dulles of the OSS. And there was a lot of opposition by the British government, but what they were saying was they would sign a secret accord and quickly take over from where the Germans are, get a rapid disarmament, in quotes, liberate them. And John McCaffrey and Edgar Leslie of M16 would be working with Alan Dulles, and they set up a team that were accused later of working with a conspiracy of a cabal of disenchanted Prussian generals, translated means Nazis from the Eastern Front that they were working with. December 27, 1944, journalist Guglielmo Gianni founds a newspaper called The Common Man, an extreme right-wing paper directed to the reactionary middle class based on fascist sympathizers, monarchists, and persons from the Salo Republicans, where Mussolini had been staying. They set up espionage operations and operations for the end of a continuation of what really is the fascism that took place in Italy to replace Mussolini after the war. Now, I had this on the air, a lot of this material, going back to broadcast 622, I believe, or 624, which was 3 years ago. But again, there are new listeners, and this is important to know about the role of Angleton, because he then goes on to be in charge of the Israeli desk in the Mossad, and that's where Mr. Nimrodi and Nir and Michael Ledeen connect through James Angleton's work in the Middle East and in Washington in the CIA. Now, there are documents, according to this book, that provide evidence of close links between the Italian fascists and the Roman Catholic Church. This document advises the OVRA, the O-V-R-A, agents, Mussolini's secret police, to infiltrate all the Communist Party, the National Liberation Committees. And in April of 45, and the war would officially be over in May, Admiral Ellery Stone, who became a Knight of Malta, the U.S. pro-consul in occupied Italy, instructed James Angleton that he was to rescue Prince Valerio Borghese from the possibility of arrest by the Resistance Committee. The Resistance Committees had sentenced Borghese to death for the war crimes. Stone was a close friend of Borghese's, Stone from the Vatican and from the United States. The Black Prince, he was referred to Borghese, and his name is in the telephone directories of Clay Shaw, and was part of the Permandex operation set up in Rome later in the late 50s, that was the operational organization for murdering heads of states, and one of those people that was murdered was John Kennedy. So Angleton had the job of rescuing Borghese, which he did, and some people thought of him as a wartime hero. His frogmen and his submarines and so forth were blowing up American ships. So in April 45, just 2 weeks, April 29th, about 10 days before the war was over, Angleton, with Captain Carlo Resia of Italian Navy Intelligence, collected Prince Borghese from his hiding place in Milan, an apartment just exactly near where James Angleton's father was all these years, or where the Banco Ambrosiano would be set up with Roberta Calvi. He was dressed in the uniform of a U.S. officer and escorted to Rome. Reinhard Gehlen, the chief of Hitler's intelligence, of course, was dressed as a U.S. officer and taken to the United States. And this chronology in the book title is called Stefano Della Calle. He's the defendant in the bombing cases that's taking place in Italy right now. And he worked very closely with James Angleton and Prince Borghese, and with the hard right, not only right wing, but outright fascist Nazis, many who should have been tried and killed were allowed to live and spread their disease of teaching how to kill and setting up death squads and working with the American intelligence. In this book, Stefano Della Calle, there's a picture of Eino Valerio Borghese, who Angleton helped release and had chosen him in his uniform. And under his direction, he was responsible for the torture and mass murder of Italian partisans. So he was taken to Rome and was protected by the very factors that were working in other countries to do the same thing. This book says, to the threat of communism, France organized small, efficient police cells outside the police structure under the supervision of special persons in the government, and these cells were equipped with money and trained to perfection. And in Italy, the same thing was going. They were secret anti-communist police groups. And these same little cells are the kind that North and Secord and Hakim and Robert Owen and many others belong to in this country. Only instead of trying after a long struggle to kill the resistance are being killed off by death squads in this country. That's what the AVG group is, Robert Brown and Lamar Hunt and the former Marines and the Minutemen, is to kill people in this country who would oppose fascism as it goes along the way and wipe them out. According to this book on Stefano Della Calle, these little teams rounded up and arrested these persons who were charged to be communists and the anti-anarchist group. They killed 62 people that they admitted, 40 of them members of the Communist Party. This was after the war in 1948. Over 3,000 were injured. Over 93,000 were arrested, 92,000. And many of them that were killed were those that were working for the resistance movement to get rid of fascism. There was a Pedrino Belgrado who was tried and for his crime of anti-fascist activities, and he was in prison for 30 years because he was an anti-fascist. And this book continues on the role of U.S. Secret Service agents Peter Baru, Daniel McCarthy, Dr. Trudeau under James Angleton. The MSI began a massive program of expansion, and by 1948 they had 1,874 branches. They controlled 34 weekly magazines. They established covert organizations, and they had ex-servicemen from the Italian government and from Mussolini, and they launched their daily reports and became a real power in Europe that began sabotaging and killing persons that looked to be leftists, and they referred to themselves as the White Guards, whose duty was to keep under observation any groups advocating disobedience, embryonic form of sabotage, to combat progressive poisoning of minds, prevent the weaker members from society from being influenced by hostile propaganda, to prevent the appointment of communists to positions of authority, and to thwart criminal solidarity. Yeah, I think that was broadcast 665 that I shared that with you. James Angleton was behind the formation of these groups, and then, of course, it goes into 1960 when the groups that he set up began working with persons like Stefano Della Calle. John McCaffrey, the man who recruited Angleton before his death, made out an affidavit that he plotted with Michele Sindona in an attempt to overthrow the Italian government. And the very people whose names are making history in our current time worked even before the war was over, from 1943 and 44, setting the network, as I've said many times, for persons who are active in our political campaigns in this country at the present time. There's a picture in this book of Carlo Presenti, a famous cement manufacturer and insurance tycoon, backer of the Italian fascists and head of the MSI, the hardliners. And there's a gentleman called Luigi Turchi, T-U-R-C-H-I, who was one of the mainstays of the committee to reelect the president of Richard Nixon, who worked with G. Gordon Liddy and Robert Mardian. And then he was part of the 1972 reelection campaign, a guest of honor at the official reception to celebrate Nixon's reelection as president. Well, my time is up. I can't even begin to touch the career of Engleton, but he goes from 1943 and fascism, and he made a Knight of Malta by the Vatican, to having people in the committee to reelect the president. And those people are working today with the Iran-Contra affair, and parts of their contacts are being made visible through their testimony. This is Mae Brussel, and I'll be continuing more about the hearings and their connections to the fascists of the past and present. In the meantime, thank you for letters and books you've been sending and articles, and I'll try to answer you as soon as I can. The important thing about the Iran-Contra affair is that young people that come along, such as Ollie North and Robert Owen, who are the young ones, tap right into the network that was set up before World War II is over, and I will want to emphasize that as the hearings develop.